Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Sue wasn't cheap. A guy finds out his accounts were charged.
The rich take for granted their money will always be there. That's why they're so easy to steal from.
Target approaching.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding Westworld, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Westworld. I'm David Chen.
I'm Joanna Robinson.
Welcome to the show. On each week's episode of Decoding Westworld, we recap the most recent episode of Decoding Westworld. We will spoil it, but we will not spoil anything from future week's episodes. That includes anything on the next time on preview of the show. This week, we'll be discussing Season 3, Episode 4, The Mother of Exiles. You can find more episodes of the show at decodingwestworld.com. Email us at decodingwestworld@gmail.com. So at the beginning of every episode, we also like to go over emails, corrections, what have you, things that we thought of after we recorded the last episode. And a few things we want to go over today. First of all, Jonah Robinson, I think there was an issue with a location that was given on last week's episode, right?
Yeah, I think I got it right in an earlier episode, but just got it wrong last week for sure. But the location, the City of Arts and Sciences, which we've seen stand in for Della's headquarters a couple times, that is a real life place. It is a real life place in Spain. I think I said I was in Barcelona. It is in Valencia, as
many people pointed that out. So thank you for pointing that out.
My favorite of the responses was someone being like, I didn't want one of your listeners to go to Barcelona and be bummed that the building wasn't there. And I was like, okay, folks, if you end up traveling somewhere because of something we said on this podcast, like, I need to see more of your vacation photos. Like, I don't think we're that influential.
People definitely do guide. People make their itineraries based on what they hear on a Westworld podcast, I think.
Yes. If you want to go to that staggeringly beautiful building, it is in Valencia, which is not the same as Barcelona, as we all know. There you go.
All right. Next item you have here in the show notes, the Charlie thing. What is the Charlie thing?
Okay, so we got a couple emails about this, and I swear I mentioned this on the podcast last week, but maybe I breezed past it too quickly. So a bunch of people thought I hadn't picked up on it, but I promise I did, which is that Jake, played by Michael Ealy, who is Charlotte, the real Charlotte Hale's baby daddy, called her Charlie, which is not a nickname we've heard anyone use on her. And Charlie is also the name of Bernard/Arnold's son, who we got a lot of in season one, and we actually got a little bit of in this week's episode, episode four. I took that to be a winking little nod towards the fact, and I wrote about this on thef.com, but a little winking nod towards the fact that in season one, a bunch of us, including me, were like, wait a minute. What if Charlotte Hale is Charlie? Because Charlotte and Charlie, like, they never called her that on the show before last week, but it was just sort of like a Charlotte, Charlie, could it be sort of connection? But like, it was a pretty silly theory at the time, like grasping at straws. And so I took this little nod to Charlie here being like a little bit of Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan poking fun at us for a bad theory from season one. But
wow,
you know,
that is like multiple layers deep, that one.
That was my interpretation. So because like a bunch of people emailed me and they were like, what if Charlotte's trial is like, not this again. We can't do it again. This was a bad season one theory. We can't bring it back in season three. Then again, we got a Charlie flash in this episode. So I don't know. But the genders, I don't know. Anyway, Charlie's dead and he was a boy. So that's not to be too gender binary about it. But that's my response to that. Okay.
We did get an email from somebody who asked me to omit her first name, and her last name is Nichols. I don't know why they asked me to omit their first name, because this email doesn't make as much sense anymore. But here we go. I wanted to point out that pre-host Charlotte, in her last scene in the park, recorded on some as-yet-identified host, pointedly refers to her son by his full name, Nathan Hale. As there are no character name coincidences in Westworld, I thought it was interesting that her son shares a name with the Revolutionary War hero from my home state of Connecticut. Nathan Hale was a spy for the Continental Army during the American Revolution and famously went behind enemy British lines. I have no idea if this will have any relevance to the plotline, but I thought it was interesting. Also, I share Joanna's annoyance with rather suddenly retconning Charlie as a mother. Charlotte as a mother, and having that be the thing that gives her character depth or whatever. It does feel like a tired and gendered trope to me, a proudly child-free person. When a child suddenly gives a character new meaning or a new lease on life, surely there are other better ways for us to find out who Charlotte was before she was a host. So that email comes in from someone whose last name is Nichols, writing into decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Nathan Hale. Another reference in a name there, Jenna Robinson. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a coincidence. I think they were like, oh, we've got the last name Hale. What name could we pose with it? Ah, something that connotes like spying and going behind enemy lines. It's perfect. So I also think something that I noticed after we recorded last week is that, you know, mostly we see Nathan in bed. Right. Except like when they're at the park or at school or whatever later. But mostly he's like having these nighttime chats with Charlotte, which is like does connect to Charlie, because all we saw of Charlie, Arnold/Bernard's son, was in a hospital bed. So like these little boys in their PJs right. on their pillows, like that's a visual connection. I also thought it was interesting that on Nathan's pillowcase, you see these arrow. There's an arrow design on his sheets. Which is pretty identical to the arrows that sort of turn into the Rehoboam sphere in the opening credits. I don't think anything's a coincidence on Westworld. So I don't think those are a coincidence, but I'm not sure it means much more than like an arrow is an arrow along with a lot of the other imagery in the opening credits is like a symbol of, you know, something on its course, on a trajectory sort of thing. So.
Good catch. Speaking of names, we got this email from Bill Johnson, who writes in, quote, "This isn't a fully thought out thing yet, but I do think it's interesting and possibly relevant that Dolores has been linked with people in alphabetical order. Arnold created her originally. Bernard created by Dolores. Caleb, partner in crime to take down the real world, The best connection I can come up with is that these are some form of reference to a revision number, like software does go through alpha and beta versions. Maybe it's tied to the level of consciousness or God or something. Not fully formed, but curious if you had a take or a perspective on it. John Robinson, any take on the names being alphabetical?
I kind of liked that. I always thought that that was true of Arnold and Bernard. That it was
AB, right?
Yeah, AB, like that. That made sense to me. I never thought about putting C and Caleb in that sequence, but that's kind of fun. But I would wonder where William, someone who is so often associated with Dolores, where that would fit in. But maybe we're not thinking of William in the same. I think of William and Caleb as linked, and Teddy as sort of these like. Romantic-ish interests for Dolores. But, you know, I like it, is what I have to say.
All right. You have it here in the show notes, King Midas. What is this King Midas thing in the show notes?
Well, it's time for Greek Mythology Corner. I don't know. I was just thinking about when I was watching this week's episode, which opens with, like, William and Emily, which we'll get to eventually in our rundown. I was thinking of the myth of King Midas, which is, like, Midas is... you know, the story of King Midas is that, you know, he wishes for, you know, the ability to, everything he touches turns to gold, right? That's something that he wishes for. And at first he's like, this rules, look how rich I am. Everything I touch turns to gold. Then he found he couldn't like eat anything because any food he touched, I guess he needed chopsticks, right? But like any food he touched turned to gold. He couldn't eat. He couldn't drink because any like water he tried to scoop up from the river like turned to gold. Like so straws and chopsticks. But maybe it would have turned to gold in his mouth. I don't know. But anyway, the real tragic end for King Midas is that his daughter comes running towards him and like throws herself into his arms and she turns to gold. And he's like, my curse. I was just
good
thinking
King
about
Midas impression.
Thank you.
Nailed it.
I'm known for my King Madison budget. Anyway, so I was just thinking about like William and like sort of this, you know, this park that he's created, this like the power that he created for himself, and the fact that like, you know, his dalliance with technology, with robots, his fascination, his kingdom that he's built out of it, you know, and then his daughter sort of like comes at him and like she dies. And so I was just sort of thinking of him and like sort of a King Midas sort of allegory.
All right. Nice. And finally, we got a voicemail from a listener. People can send in their voice clips. They don't do that very often because we don't play them very often. But we did get a voicemail explaining what they thought about the meaning of Serac's name, the character played by Vincent Cassell. Let's take a listen to that voicemail right now.
Hey, Joanna and David, this is Chloe, huge fan of the podcast and of Westworld, of course. I'm on my daily walk to get away from my house during the lockdown here. So I'm from France, and I wanted to kind of give it my shot at pronunciation. I'm not a specialist, though, not a linguist, so I can give my perspective, but it might be wrong. So just disclaimer on that. What Joanna was saying about the Ange root was interesting. So I was thinking about it, and I looked up the name. And there's sort of two ways I would look at this and try to pronounce it. Angiron or Angiron, a little, you know, it's kind of a weird word, so I haven't seen anything like it. So if we go with Angiron, it's really close to Ange and Iron. So that would be angel and kind of drifting or traveling like a vagabond. So that's a really cool kind of take on it if we go with that pronunciation, Angiron, because it's Ange Errant, right? So a wandering angel drifting between worlds, maybe, is something that comes to mind. Just a thought. Might be wrong. I might have that pronunciation off. It's just when I look at it, that's the pronunciation I would probably give it. Love your podcast. Been listening from the beginning, and thank you so much for giving us some fun things to listen to during this time of being at home.
So I thought this was a delightful voicemail.
Me too.
Nice name interpretation there.
Yeah. So the idea of like Enguerrade is ange errant, like errant angel, wandering angel or whatever, which to me, like I was trying to look at like when Chloe said that, and I was like, well, of course, this has to be it. Maybe, I think. So I was looking up like errant angel to see if there was like anything, any specific meaning tied to that, like in literature or poetry. And I found like some like out of print poetry collection called The Errant Angel, but I couldn't find anything. And then like a romance novel, I think, called The Errant Angel. But I couldn't find like any of the contents of the poetry collection. I did not think the romance novel is what we were looking for, but anyway, I think errant angel invokes Lucifer, right? Lucifer the fallen angel, yeah. Sort of thing. So that's that, you know, that would be my best interpretation of Chloe's interpretation of this name.
All right, so let's dive into the episode, The Mother of Exiles. And what do we make of this title, Jonah Robinson?
So something we know is that Lisa Joy loves poetry. That's why I was looking up to see if errant angel had something to do with poetry. Lisa Joy, co-creator of Westworld, loves poetry. So The Mother of Exiles here is from the poem that is on the base of the Statue of Liberty, the New Colossus, written by Emma Lazarus. I'm going to read it. It's short. Okay. The poem goes, you'll know part of it. Feel free to sing along to the part you know. Okay. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch whose flame is the imprisoned lightning and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep ancient lands your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. So.
Nicely done, Joanna.
So the Mother of Exiles is another name for the Statue of Liberty. And so who do we think this is a reference to in this episode? I feel like it has to be Dolores.
Yes, Dolores, right, is the most obvious interpretation.
But it is the most obvious interpretation. But, like, do we want to say it's Maeve? I mean, who's truly offering liberty to people? And that's the question. That has been the question. And this idea of, like, Dolores and Bernard and Maeve all as options, like thought leaders in the world of advanced hostery, with apologies to Stubbs. I don't think he's quite on their level, but, like, you know, they all have their ideas of what is best for the hosts. What is freedom for the hosts and what is this new world? I still don't think we fully understand what Dolores is planning to do. Like, she talks about building a new world for the likes of Maeve's daughter, you know what I mean, in the form of Musashi in this episode. So, like, yeah, in theory, she's making a new world, and then everyone who's stored in the Valley Beyond can come get 3D printed and live in this new world that she's created. Is that what she's trying to do? Maeve is not down with that, and she seems to have a different idea of what freedom means for hosts, and Bernard also has his ideas. But what's interesting is that for all of them, Maeve and Dolores and Bernard, we see examples in this episode or questions in this episode about how controlling they are with the hosts that are in sort of their sweat. You know, like the way in which Bernard just shuts Stubbs off in this episode, as he did two episodes ago, like reprogram Stubbs, like that kind of controlling thing that he has. And then Dolores' Musashi says something similar to Maeve, where she's like, did you give us a choice? What kind of choice did you give Hector? What kind of choice did you give Clementine? Like, what kind of freedom did you offer them? Did they have any choice to follow you? And then, you know, Dolores, in terms of like Charlotte and all the hosts that are her, I mean, that's the big reveal of this episode, right? But like, who are her, but also she's the alpha, she's in control of all of them. So it's like, can you offer liberty while forcing someone to obey you?
Yeah.
Are those concepts, you know, reconcilable, is a question. So.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, you talked about the big reveal of this episode, which is that we learned who is in Charlotte Hale's body, and we learned who the other hosts that were printed out were. Almost all of them. And so Dolores, Bernard, Connells, Saito, and then one other unnamed one, right?
Sorry, Musashi. I think I wrote Saito, but yeah, Musashi.
Musashi. Who is Saito?
Sato
is that the guy from Inception?
Yes, but Sato is the name Musashi is using as the head of the Yakuza.
I see.
S-A-T-O, which is close to Saito. That's my bad. But anyway, yes.
No worries. Yeah, I was like, yeah, but I don't know if that's right. But yeah, so those are the five people or four of the five people that right. have been printed out. So that's the big reveal of this episode, is that it's Dolores that's in all of them, basically, right?
Except Bernard, right? Bernard is his own thing. And then Dolores, Connells, and Musashi are all, and Charlotte are all Dolores. But there is a fifth mystery pearl out there.
There is another.
There is another Skywalker. I have a theory as to who I think it is.
And you don't know who it is.
I don't know. This is fun, guys. I don't know what comes next, so I get to theorize. So I think it might be Dolores in the body,
right?
Well, that might be a question. Like, it might be is this a Dolores clone or not? Like, you know. But if we see another body, whether or not it has Dolores inside of it or not, I gotta put my chips on Clementine. I think we're going to see Angela Serafian. I think I did not butcher her name. Again, mostly because of what she means to A, because she's a popular character on the show. And that actress is just so tremendous. And B, because of what she means to Maeve. I think that will matter.
Yeah. The gauntlet has been thrown, Joanna Robinson. But let's talk about this episode overall. How did you feel about that reveal?
I don't like it. I think it's a little bit of a cheat, honestly.
You know, it only took me 4 episodes to start getting angry at Westworld again.
especially because of a lot of what we talked about last week. There's a lot I do like in this episode. I just rewatched it again. I really do like it. But that is not my favorite thing that they did this season, especially because I really would have liked to have known that when watching Tessa Thompson last week, that she was doing Dolores. That felt important.
Well, that's not my problem with it. I mean, I agree that the episode would have been stronger if you knew that going in. Yeah. But the big problem is that for a reveal like this, what you want to have happen is you reveal that information and then the audience thinks back on everything they saw before and it all makes sense. It all snaps into place. It's like The Sixth Sense. Oh, he was dead the whole time. Like that one scene, you know, that's why his wife couldn't see Bruce Willis in the restaurant in The Sixth Sense, is because he was dead. You know, you want the audience to have that, like those waves of realization, being like, oh, they planned it the entire time. Genius. This rewards repeat viewings. Whereas it's not completely unreasonable. It's not like they didn't do anything to seed that idea in the last couple episodes. For instance, we talked about how Charlotte Hale with Dolores' Pearl Insider straight up murders a pedophile in broad daylight, which is something that Dolores/Wyatt would do.
Right. I mean, yeah.
But all that earlier stuff of her waking up and being super confused about why she needs to be in Charlotte Hale and you're the only person, that just did not strike me as the way a clone of Dolores would act in that scenario.
Well, I think if you rewatch it, which I have a couple times, I think the idea is that that Dolores is like baby Dolores.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like Dolores, like this is evolved Dolores is who we're seeing in Evan Rachel Wood's body, but who we're seeing in Charlotte's body is like ranch hand daughter Dolores.
But then the
right?
part where she like, I guess in the part when she becomes a cold-blooded killer is her recalling
her like
her past life before she was ranch hand Dolores, I guess.
Well, she's like, oh, you like awakened the predator in me, sort of like, which is the Wyatt sort of thing. So I saw from the beginning, I saw a lot of people. Here's what I'll say. When I saw some people theorizing that it might be Dolores and all the other bodies after the first episode, I got suspicious that someone with access to screeners was pushing that theory online. But after like the fact that it grew in popularity, like later I was like, yeah, like I think a couple episodes, like if I had watched this week by week and had discussions week by week, both people, I could have like, I didn't have that opportunity. I watched all these episodes at once. I didn't like sit and think about like who Dolores might be. I just watched it all. And so, yeah, I can see how people like were guessing that. You know, this happened, like, I don't mean to sound snooty. Like it sounds like, I don't know, it sounds bad to say like, well, if you guessed that, you must have had a spoiler. But that does happen sometimes. People who are like involved in production go on Reddit and they like put up theories that like there's just no way people could have come up with. So that was my suspicion around the theorizing after the first episode. But now, I mean, like some, especially after episode 3, I think some, when you rewatch that scene with Charlotte and Dolores, when she's like waking up and she's like, what, basically she's like, why do you get to look like you? Like, why do you get to wear the Dolores suit? And I gotta wear this one. You know what I mean? I think it's there. The most common theory I saw that was close to what is true is that it was like Wyatt, because like Wyatt, you remember, is the merciless killer personality that was put into Dolores when Arnold wanted her to like massacre all the hosts. So this idea of like Dolores is having like a split personality and that like Wyatt being part of it. So a lot of people thought like maybe she had put the Wyatt part of her in Charlotte or something like that. But I don't think that's the case. I think all the Doloreses are Dolores. You know what I mean? Which is both ranch hand daughter and mass killer. She contains multitudes.
She contains multitudes, literally.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. Well, maybe I'm going too hard on the episode then, Joanna.
No, I mean, I don't like it.
I guess I'm a little surprised because I felt like you were even more angry at it than I was.
Well, I don't. I think I'm angry because I am feel so certain that this was not their plan at the end of last season. And so then for them to be like, well, that's going to be the big mystery, a big mystery of season at the end of season 2, they're like, that's going to be a big mystery of season 3. Who's in all these bodies sort of thing. And then to be like, JK was just copy paste Dolores. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, that just seems like sometimes the Westworld folks like to do that where they're like, it seems like they're more invested in fooling you than actually giving you something that feels like super emotionally rewarding. Mm. So, I mean, do I think that Dolores is vainglorious enough to like have copy pasted herself? Yes, I do. Is that where I think they were going at the end of season 2? No, especially because if you look at the pearls at the end of season 2, you know, Charlotte has like 5 pearls in her bag as she's leaving the island. They're all gray. But if you look at the ones that are, you know, we see in this season, it's 4 gray ones and 1 reddish gray one. And the reddish gray one belongs to Bernard. And it's because it's a blend of the red, which is Arnold, like, because the human pearls are red. So it's a blend of the human pearl that is Arnold and the gray pearl that is Bernard. And that was not what we saw in the bag at the end of season 2. So that's something they decided to do. So it's just like when, I mean, there's like a potentially even bigger retcon in this episode, which is the like, are we undoing the crazy William end of credits thing that happened at the end of season 2? Possibly. Right. So yeah. That, you know, so that sort of, that frustrates me when they like lay something out, say it's something in an interview, and then sort of like write themselves a trapdoor out of it. That bothers me. It probably doesn't bother the average viewer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, a couple thoughts on that. Number one, Westworld got a Westworld. You know, it's kind of where I'm coming at it from. And number two, I will give them this. That is not an outcome I would have guessed. You know, we talked about it last week. In none of my scenarios was my prediction, hey, she copied and pasted herself 5 times. And I was genuinely shocked when I saw it. And it's hard to genuinely shock me or surprise me these days. And so I will give Westworld that. But, you know, that's never something that Westworld was bad at. You know, it was never bad at surprising plot twists. And it's some of the other things that I think it needs work on that we've talked about in the past. In any case, we got to get into this episode, and I might kind of fast forward through some of these scenes here. But season 3, episode 4, The Mother of Exiles. So we'll talk about the William and Charlotte stuff at the end of this podcast episode. But there was a scene earlier on with Bernard and Stubbs, and they're kind of hanging out in a hotel room. Stubbs has kind of retreated to the sad frat bro part of his programming, it seems.
Like, you gotta give him to him though, like the one-handed beer can open was pretty slick.
He's programmed to want to drink beer for some reason.
I don't know.
I don't think we've ever seen him drink beer in the rest of the show. So
no.
it's very odd. But he's apparently in San Bernardino, California, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to track down Dolores to theoretically stop her, right? Is what's happening.
Yeah. They need to give us, like, what we learn in this scene is that Bernard has a little switch that can, like, stop hosts and their, like, freeze all motor functions, right? B, that he believes that Dolores has done a find and replace on Liam. Like, he figures out her plan, he just has the wrong
Liam
guy.
Dempsey Jr., right?
Correct.
Yep.
Yes. So he thinks it's the like rich asshole when in fact it's his body man sort of thing, right? 3, we get some exposition on the fact that Stubbs' shoulder is injured, both from like what happened in Westworld and then like a 5-mile swim that they had to do for some reason.
Yes,
we don't know why.
Completely off screen though. Completely off screen.
We don't know what that was about, but they had to swim 5 miles and then they landed in the shitty motel in San Bernardino. Yeah. We do get this weird, this interesting flash when Bernard is walking past a kid watching this like really cool, I think like rocket, like the rocket launch in the distance is cool, but the rocket landing is really cool because that's not a thing that exists in our world, I think. Like rockets don't land like that, do they? I don't know. Question mark. I don't know about anything about rockets, but there's two things landing with like afterburners that look like a launch, but it's in reverse. Anyway, I thought that was cool. So this little family's watching that and he sees this young boy and he flashes to an image of Charlie. We also see him remember being in the cradle. You know, when they're in the cradle, the simulation sort of thing, when the letterbox formatting hits the old screen there. So if you go into Letterbox, that's a simulation. So he remembers Dolores building him and stuff like that. So he's just having those like Arnold Bernard memories.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll mention about the San Bernardino motel scene is that Stubbs has this like cool, like aerial tour of Hollywood. Not cool. It's deeply uncool. It's like that scene in Pulp Fiction when John Travolta and Samuel Jackson have to like wear t-shirts and look like a couple of dorks. Right, yeah. He looks like a dork in this like aerial tour of Hollywood shirt, which features a drone, which is pretty great. But they determined that they have to go to a party, I guess.
This season has not been kind to this Hemsworth overall.
Well, he gets a cool fight. He gets a cool fight in this episode. So, yeah.
All right. So then there's Caleb and Dolores. They are going to infiltrate this big party. So we see Dolores say, hey, you gotta dress the part. She takes Caleb to this place to buy some clothing. And there's this really cool like clothing try-on scene. It's very similar to like Grand Theft Auto. There seems to be many things that remind me of Grand Theft Auto in this show, but
right.
If you ever were like trying to buy clothes in a video game, it's very similar to this where you have your avatar on screen and then you press a button and then, oh, here's how they look with this vest or, you know, and it's not just Grand Theft Auto, it's many video games. But it's also a cool vision of augmented reality. And that's something we've praised in the show before is I think the vision of the future, it feels very grounded. You know, it feels, it's not like Star Trek. It's very like, hey, this is stuff that you could actually see happening in, you know, 20, 30 years. This kind of augmented reality stuff. So,
yeah, I really liked that. It reminded me of Clueless. So that's my there is an AR, but she's got her like closet app. Anyway, I really like what Dolores says here about having Caleb feels uncomfortable having to dress up as if he is like, you know, one of the upper echelon, and Dolores is like, it's plumage, the outfits are tribal, like, and that's why it's so easy to fool them. She says this a couple times about various things in terms of like, it's easy to steal from super rich people because super rich people don't check their balances as anxiously as poor people do. They just assume their money's going to be there. So Dolores,
similar theme to like Parasite as well, the Bong Joon-ho movie, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
this kind of idea that like rich people can easily be duped because their lives create a sense of security for them. So, so anyway, there's this kind of bank heist sequence where like Connell's somehow, I guess, alpha males Liam into signing over his money. And then they take that info and then go to the bank and like take this guy's blood. It felt very, again, very video gamey to me, but not in a good way. You know, it's like, oh, your blood's going to degrade in 15, you have 15 minutes to get this, you know. It's not terrible or anything. It's just like, it's fine. And
it didn't feel like fun, intense in any way. You know what I mean? Like, right, I love a heist, and this did not feel like a good fun
heist. Just because it's set up so quickly, and then it's over so quickly. It's like, it's less than half the episode, so you can only kind of get your heart rate up, so to speak, for so long. But I will say that the bank that they're in looks incredible. It just is like architecturally, it is like, wow, that is a spectacular looking building. They unsurprisingly, they get the money and then they're off to the races, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they go into this party. Which, by the way, I was asking you, what is the song? It's the song is Wicked Games, which is it's an orchestral arrangement, right? Sounds like a string arrangement of Wicked Games. As far as I know, like I remember in Westworld season one and possibly season two, remember when like every week there would be a Ramin Djawadi like song drop on the internet? You remember that?
Yeah.
I don't think that's happening to season three right now, which is kind of a bummer.
Well, there was a really good one last week. It wasn't like so this song by The Weeknd is like pretty well known, but the song that happened last week, which I think is called Doom or Doomed. Anyway, it's a much less well-known song, and it's actually by an artist who's like a friend of, or like who composed a song with Tessa Thompson for the Creed soundtrack. So that felt like he's friends with Tessa Thompson, and she's like, hey, can we use like listen to my bud's music, isn't it cool? So like a cello version, a cover version of that played as Charlotte was going to Ciroc's compound last week. I think it's just less obvious because we don't have like the cool player piano, like zoom in on the player piano as the music drops into place and we get like Radiohead or something like that. And also these picks maybe feel a little bit more budget friendly than some of the other ones that they were doing before. The whole theme, I think, of season three is like budget friendly, honestly.
But I've listened to all the covers that have happened so far. This is the one that I was like, this is great. I wish I could listen to this right now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good.
So I hope that eventually they are able to release these covers on the internet like they did for seasons one and two. But yeah, great, great cover. And there's this kind of great percussive energy to it that makes it a great way to score this action sequence, which happens at this scene. So anyway, these rich people are basically bidding on these women. Society's gender attitudes haven't changed that much in the last intervening years since today, unfortunately. And then Dolores and Caleb are trying to extract Liam's money and do what exactly in this scene?
Well, they already got his money. Yeah. I think they're trying to just kidnap him.
They're just trying to kidnap him, but then they run into Bernard and Stubbs, right? Who are also doing their own thing here.
The most interesting thing, so Bernard and Stubbs are trying to like freeze all motor functions Liam because they think he's
because
they
think it's him, not Connells, right? Which is he actually is the host,
right? And so Connells is in like, you know, he's in the, I was trying to think of like the Eagle's Nest position, right? And he's like looking down around everything and helping out, right? And and he's like the most fascinating thing he says, I think, is your friends are here sooner than we expected. And I love that because it's like Dolores set Bernard loose expecting that Bernard would come back and like clash with her. Like she wanted that to happen, right?
Yes.
But he says like your friends, plural. So I'm like, does that mean she was anticipating Stubbs too? Like, that's pretty cool. Like she's anticipating,
she's planning
Maeve
18
too.
Chess moves ahead, Joanna.
Yeah, Robinson. She's ahead of Bernard and Stubbs and Maeve, as we find out. And so like that's pretty cool of her. But yeah, so like this storyline collides, right? It's like Bernard and Stubbs come and try to like get Liam to tell them who the other like find and replace jobs that Dolores has done are. Meanwhile, Dolores is trying to kidnap Liam at the same time, and they all clash. So we get this like cool Dolores Stubbs fight. I really liked it.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it's also like really difficult to do a fight like this when one of the characters is wearing kind of a very
revealing dress.
How do I say this? But yeah, I mean, it's not very protective clothing, put it that way,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It's very difficult to do that in a way that's safe. And they really sold it. They really sold it that Evan Rachel Wood is kicking ass in that amazing outfit. And she does an amazing job. She and her stunt double do amazing jobs.
Well, and apparently Evan Rachel Wood went back and like insisted. I heard this about the episode one fight. I'm not sure if it's true about this fight as well, though. I don't know why it wouldn't be. But she like insisted she get to do more of her stunts because she has like about black belts, I think. And so like a lot of those moves are actually Evan Rachel Wood, though. I'm certain her stunt double is in there as well. I love this fight.
Yeah,
it's great.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
And like, I think, like, I don't know if the whole injured shoulder thing with Stubbs is so that like we can believe that a robot Dolores would beat him in a fight.
Right.
Like, that's what I'm worried about. And that kind of bums me out because I'm kind of like, I just believe Dolores could beat him in a fight. I just do. But like, he maybe like,
it's because of that 5-mile swim offshore that we didn't see John Robinson.
I don't like, but that's the thing, is it's sort of like, I don't know, it made me think of like when we used to talk about Game of Thrones, there's that fight between Brienne and the Hound, and Brienne wins, and like the internet for years and years and years was like, no way Brienne of Tarth could beat the Hound in a fight. Men are just more physically imposing. So that, like, I don't know. But I'm like, they're robots, so let's not worry about it, you know?
They're robots. And also, Game of Thrones is over.
Oh, and that's right.
Those people can't hurt us anymore.
This isn't the last Game of Thrones reference I will make in this episode. I promise you that. Okay.
Hopefully it's the last. Hopefully there's no more Game of Thrones episode in the references in the show as well.
Oh, maybe.
So anyway, Caleb and Dolores basically run off with Liam. The episode does a cool thing where like all three storylines reveal who the hosts are, like the Doloreses like are at the same time in the episode. That's kind of cool. I like that, like the intercutting between the three stories.
I thought it was really cool, and not just that, but like I liked that Dolores is lying to all of them in a way that like. Well, no, I guess she just did it to William and Bernard, but she's like your oldest friend. You know what I mean? I don't think she did it in the Maeve reveal. That wouldn't make a lot of sense, but like. Don't you know me after everything we've been through is sort of the vibe of all of those reveals.
Right.
But with Maeve, I think it's more like, I think she does the whole like, it, you know, if you want a job done right, do it yourself thing.
Yeah.
But I love that reveal across all three. I'm gonna give Westworld credit where it deserves it.
Yeah. Technically, like on a technical level, you know, when you talk about things like just the craft of editing and production design and things like that, I don't think Westworld has ever really suffered. So I think this season that scene, particularly when they're cutting between them and it's dawning on you, the viewer, what's happening. It's pretty well done. Pretty well done. Okay. Anything else about the sequence?
Yeah. I do want to give a shout out to a reference in the party scene where, you know, Liam comes in, it's a prostitute auction for charity. Is what we're given to understand of this, like, hold eyes wide shut. Cause we should talk, I mean, like, it's an amazingly striking, you know, Westworld is always good at its like orgies and debauched sort of designer parties and stuff like that. And so like this, the design of this looks really cool. These prostitutes, both male and female, sort of on platforms for the highest bidder, all going to charity. But the character of Roderick, who is Liam's sort of Logan-esque friend, you know, Logan's like, I don't like prostitutes. And he says all sex is commerce. And basically like, if you think it's not, that means you're being billed indirectly, which is a fun thing to say, I suppose. And then,
good line, good one-liner.
It is a good line. And it reminds me of this one that Maeve had in season one in the brothel where she says, you're always paying for it, darling. The difference is our costs are fixed and posted right there on the door. Mm. So this idea of like sex is commerce. And I also really love when Liam's friends see quote unquote Laura Dolores.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the woman is like, blames it on the drugs. She's like, these drugs are good, blah, blah. But the guy, like, stops in his track. Roderick stops in his tracks, and she taps the old nucleus accumbens as she walks past him. The old nucleus accumbens tap. Classic Dolores.
A lot of nice touches. Yeah, I agree. Pretty cool sequence. Pretty cool sequence overall. Like that whole section. That's the Caleb and Dolores plotline. Let's move on to Maeve and Siroc. They have some dialogue this week. So Maeve goes this week on what is essentially a fetch quest, right, in video game parlance, which is you got to go to this character to get to this other thing, to get to this other character, which is your actual destination.
The layers of fat on this storyline, it's like really frustrating to me.
Yeah.
The whole mortician sequence, I'm like, why?
Yeah.
I guess just to watch like Maeve do cool stuff, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So anyway, Maeve and Siroc have some dialogue, and Siroc essentially offers her a trip to the Valley Beyond, right? He's like, I can reunite you with your daughter if you help me out. If you help me stop Dolores. Right. And that's pretty enticing offer. I am curious, like, are they going to reprogram her daughter to remember her as the mom again? I guess they didn't really address that. Right. But because wasn't her daughter like imprinted on this other?
I think she felt already? Like torn. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Do you not agree? Like, I think she felt like she felt the pull to original Maeve, but also there was like a new Maeve that she
I'm just
was...
saying it's going to be awkward, Joanna. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's going to be awkward.
It takes a village to raise a child. So yes. Like two Maeves for the price of one. Why not?
Yes.
Yeah. So like Maeve needs the key in Dolores's head to get to the Valley Beyond to hang out with her daughter. Siroc needs the section 16, is it section 6 intel you know, that Dolores has in her head. So we all want what's inside Dolores's head, sector 16. So their fates are aligned. We find out from Siroc that Paris is gone. It looks like it was like nuclear bombed. And this is part of the whole idea of insight, right, is to create order from a chaotic world. So Siroc as a character is motivated by the fact that his home city, Paris, was destroyed by the folly of mankind. And so the idea of insight is like, what if we could just like control the chaotic violence that humans are exacting on other humans?
Mm-hmm.
So that gives him a slightly sympathetic motivation. But then we like see him kill a guy and you're like, okay, you're the villain for sure.
rather cruelly, you know, as well.
Very right? cruelly, very cruelly. After making him like witness his like wife and children be tortured or something like that. A couple things I want to say about that. One, the restaurant where Siroc and Maeve meet. It's in Singapore, but it is, I think, intentionally meant to look like this restaurant we saw in season 2. It's not the same location, but there's a restaurant where like Logan Delos first meets Angela, and it's this like curved booth. It's a very similar setup, and I think that has to be intentional. But just this idea of like a host out in the real world, which is like an unusual thing to have happened. And then this idea where Siroc says, I'm not going to injure his children, but like the world is a cruel place. So, you know, things happen. And something that we didn't talk about in last week's episode was that when Dolores is showing Caleb the tablet about his life and how it was predicted that he was going to kill himself and all this sort of stuff. One of the details on the tablet said like, you know, his two relationships, and one was like terminated by like user or whatever. So like Caleb broke up with someone or whatever. And the other one was like system.
Which by the way, is how I refer to my breakups as well. But it takes the edge off.
And the other one was system interference. So like, what is, you know, if the system has decided that Caleb is not allowed to have a romantic relationship and have kids because he is eventually going to kill himself, so why invest anything in him? So what does a system interference look like in terms of breaking up a romantic relationship that Caleb might have had in the past? You know, so that's like a that's got some very insidious implications, I think, of like, how does the system correct for these things?
It also reminds me, again, I've referenced Devs maybe once or twice, but Devs is a show that's airing on Hulu right now, and it's dealing with very similar themes, I think. And there's this whole idea in Devs, which I don't, hopefully is not going to be a spoiler, but like I'm going to try to be vague, but one of the ideas that is discussed in the show is, to what extent is everything determined, right? To what extent do we have any free will? Are we just like pre-programmed to do the things we're doing? Or is it possible that there are other universes in which we didn't do this terrible, fateful thing that set us on a bad path, right? And that's kind of what that reminded me of when Serac says, like, I won't do anything. The world can be – it's the world that's a very cruel place, not me. You know, like that's kind of what that reminded me of is that like – this was always going to happen, right? And that's certainly a big theme this season overall, is like, to what extent is everything already going to happen, and does knowing it's going to happen allow you to make it not happen? So anyway, both shows tackle it from a very, very different stylistic approach, but I do think they are very complementary as I'm watching them both this season. So
and that's the whole, we'll get to William, but that's the whole thing dogging William, right?
Yeah.
So we see like we find like Maeve is sent from this guy who Serac kills
murders. Yeah.
Calling him like a traitor to his kind. And I think this whole thing that Serac says is so interesting, where he says like, oh, the system saw you hosts coming, like basically. But you're not the problem. Humans are the problem. Humans are always going to be the extinction of other humans. So I need to fully better understand human behavior in order to anticipate the way in which humans might fuck other humans up. And in order to do that, I need that technology that William was developing in secret with Jim Delos, the Jim Delos sort of stuff that was happening in Sector 16. So that's what he's after, right? Mm. Is a better understanding of the human mind through that technology. So once again, that's like it's altruism. It's villainy dressed up as altruism sort of thing. Right. Like,
right.
But yeah, so Serac calls John this like, identity guy that he kills, like a traitor to his kind sort of thing. It's very interesting. And
a traitor to his kind, meaning humans, right?
Yeah, because he helped Dolores, right? And he says there's no world. Serac says, according to the system, there's no world in which hosts and humans can coexist. Will Dolores prove him wrong? Tune in to find out.
You missed your calling as a TV announcer, Jonah.
Thank you. But yeah, so then Maeve goes after this mortician who helped furnish Dolores with the blood she needed to pass as this Laura character in order to get in close with Liam.
Yeah. So then Maeve goes to the mortician, right? And then do we want to say anything about the mortician before we get to the final?
No, it just seems like a very like non-character. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's cool that it's a woman, but like,
it's cool that it's an Asian woman. You know, I was like, oh, another Asian woman Asian character on the screen. That's cool. But little did I know we would get the mother of all or the father of all Asian characters at the end, Musashi.
Yeah.
So Maeve breaks into this place, this Yakuza distillery. And it's actually a pretty cool break-in, I think. Like, she is able to use her robot superpowers to take control of these guns. And I think the guns are cool. They're apparently, like, auto-aiming guns.
Yeah.
Right? Which is kind of a cool idea. You have an Easter egg here you want to call out, right?
It blew my mind. I really loved it. Okay, so, like, as she's breaking into this distillery, right, you see a sign. It's not, like, prominent. It's sort of in the background. It says, please excuse my Japanese pronunciation. It's Itai Doshin or Doshin Distillery. And I was like, that's got to be something. Or no, actually, what I was trying to do, actually, take you behind the curtain, was find out where they were. And I was like, well, maybe this is a real place. And that's a, you know, because like presumably she's in Japan. I just don't know where. And please don't send me angry emails about this, but like Dave and I both looked at the skyline and we couldn't figure it out necessarily. It could be Tokyo, but I don't know. So if you know, please tell me, but in a nicer way about than some of the Valencia emails we got. Anyway, so
some of them were pretty mean. We'll put that out there.
So presumably she's in Japan. But I looked up the name of the distillery. I'm like, maybe this is a real place and this will help me understand where she is so nobody yells at me. But it's not a real place as far as I can tell. But what's fun is that in like Buddhism thought, that's a two-word phrase, Itai Doshin. And it means to be of the same mind, even though we are in many bodies. Whoa! That's what's happening with Dolores.
Nice.
There's the same mind in different bodies. I'm like, that's a cool Easter egg.
That is pretty cool.
That's a really fun one. I'm like, good job. I love that. I love that Westworld. So thank you for that. And then the mortician says this thing where she goes, this isn't the kind of place that you simply stroll into. And I'm like, is that a Mordor reference?
One does not simply walk into the Itai Doshin distillery.
Exactly. Yeah. So there you go. And then, yeah. And then Musashi rolls up. And the other clue in this sequence is Musashi is the head of this Yakuza, all of the Yakuza, this branch of the Yakuza. And he's posing.
Good question, Joanna.
He's posing as someone named Sato, right? Yeah. She does at least, the mortician does at least say, like, their new leader.
Yeah, their new leader, who rose up extremely quickly the last 3 months.
Yeah. Anyway.
And by the way, who bears a strong resemblance to that guy in Shogun World in the park that everyone's been to. But don't ask any questions about that.
Don't worry about it. Anyway, his character, he's posing as someone named Sato. Sato is the name of a kind of rice beer made from sticky white rice. So presumably this distillery is making, his name is Sato and it's making Sato ? I don't know. But anyway, when they shoot the barrels and this white goop comes out, my assumption was the white goop is like part of this like Sato making process, unless it's sake. And because I know there's like milky sake. So maybe that's like a byproduct of sake production or something.
My interpretation is that they're bootlegging the substance that hosts are made out of. But I guess you didn't see that.
Yes. It all is leading to that visual of Maeve with the blood and the white goop around her. It's all like one long road to get there. But yeah.
So
you think that's what they're doing? You think they're bootlegging host goop?
I honestly don't know. This whole thing was pretty. I mean, it looked so similar to the host scoop that it didn't feel like it was just like, yes, it could just be a visual parallel, you know, could be a visual parallel, but it also just looked like it was host scoop. So I just assumed, oh, they're bootlegging the host scoop.
Oh, wow. I love that idea. That didn't even occur to me.
Well, that's why we do a podcast. So anyway, it ends with Maeve getting stabbed, and then she bleeds out alongside the white goop, which is this beautiful metaphor for how she's a combination of both human and robot.
Bro! Yes. And then it's weird because Sato doesn't – so he says like Sato as Maeve, right, or as Dolores, says like, I can't let Serac use you against us. And he stabs Maeve. She bleeds out, and then he like – looks like he's about to like take her pearl, but then doesn't and just leaves her there. So like, here's what I was looking for. I was like, I don't think Dolores would kill Maeve, which is not really what's happening here. Right. But no. I could see him saying like, I could see Dolores saying, I don't want Serac to be able to use you against us. So what I was thinking is that like Dolores would try to like disable the kill switch that Serac has on Maeve. Like that's what they, not like I want to eliminate you, but I want to eliminate Serac's control of you.
That seems pretty far-fetched, but I have learned to not doubt you. So
I think the show is trying to trick you into thinking that Dolores like wants to eliminate Maeve, but I don't think that that's the case. I think Dolores wants to eliminate Serac's control of Maeve. anyway, like, regardless, Dolores says Musashi, like, leans over the body and looks like it's going to take the pearl and then doesn't. And I'm like, what? You can't just leave. What did you accomplish then? In stab, like, because Srock's men who are at the door and they have to go, Srock's men or, you know, people are just going to come in and, like, rebuild Maeve, right? This isn't, like, an actual death of Maeve. So what was accomplished here other than a very beautiful shot of blood and goop blending together? Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's very possible. We'll see. I think it's very possible. Like I said, I'm not going to doubt you. So, because that has burned me too often in the past. So, okay. Before we move on, we got to thank some people who donated to our Kickstarter and made Decoding Westworld possible. Joanna Robinson, you have some names to thank, right?
Yes. I would love to thank Jessalyn, Christopher Calla, Patrick, Tomato, Patrick Roth. Okay. Patrick Roth. I really did not do that well. Okay. Ruhan, Patrick Byrne, Riley Bathour, Abby Rao, Abby Ademchek, Liam Hewitt, Derek Peterson, Ryan Pulis, Justin Lerbakken, Patrick Pruce, Jane Phelps, Jonas Reyes, Roland Calusa, Patrick Spinagle, Zach Flanagan Frankel, James Stout, David Kulik, Connor Roach, Bean Britton, Adam Borden, that's a friend of mine, hi, and Chris Earnshaw. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks to Judy Radu, Katarina Makaravage, Russell Confroy, Michael J. Gray, Kelsey Chestnut, J.P. Gagan. Hey, can you help me with this one, Joanna Robinson? Shall we say on 3, 2, 1,
Metal Dave!
Luke Richard, Brandon Pulaski, Jordan Anderson, Jacqueline Zaruga, Nick Norvell, Corey Graham, Christopher, Jesse Lair, Katie Truchon.
Truchon.
Yeah, you gotta take that one. Kristen Karen Durella, Trey Smith, Anne Moreau, Peggy Clements, Robin Hill, and Blangadanger. Thank you. All of you for backing the Decoding Westworld Kickstarter. We really appreciate you, and it's because of all of you that many more thousands of people have the chance to listen to us pronounce your names very poorly. Okay. Final plot line, Charlotte and William in this episode. So the episode actually opens on William. It's just super trippy. All the William stuff looks like it's dream sequence stuff, basically, right? Like, he's flashing back. He's having hallucinations. He's seeing his dead daughter. I don't necessarily want to go over every one of these hallucinations. So is there stuff you want to highlight here in terms of what he sees?
Yeah, I would say, like, just to recall that his wife, Juliet, killed herself in the bathtub. So, him finding himself in the bathtub and also all the water pouring down from the ceiling. Like, we had flashbacks in season 2 of, like, the water dripping off the crystal chandelier, sort of like how he knew that his wife had killed himself in the bathtub. So that's a reference to that. Emily's wound is obviously, like, where he shot her last season, blah, blah. It's complicated because basically they've written William this season to be like, anything we could be seeing is not true of William. Yeah. Though I have to think that in order to have like some grip on reality, we have to believe that all the scenes that he shares with Charlotte are happening in reality. Right. I think. Is what we have to want to believe.
I think that is my interpretation, yes.
Yeah, so basically, like, Charlotte shows up, and she has this, like, Charlotte is Dolores, Dolores Prime, said in last week's episode, in order to protect ourselves from Serac, you got to go see an old friend, right? She's talking about William. So Charlotte Dolores goes to see William, and she has this whole scheme where she's going to, like, record him acting erratic, and get him committed, which was actually something that Emily was thinking of doing last season. His daughter wanted him in an institution.
I didn't really need to, of course, because I know you better than anyone. I know you down to your bones. It's amusing that you think you chose to kill your own daughter. You don't even have a choice in your own grief.
Who the fuck are you?
Your oldest friend.
But she lies to him and says, like, those are Della's folks outside, and I just need you to, like, smarten yourself up, clean yourself up. We're going to go to a meet and bud, and you and I are going to vote together. We're going to stop this takeover. and then it's like, oops, wow. Fooled you. Also, I'm Dolores.
Super, super chipper impression of Charlotte there. Nicely done.
There's this sequence where she shaves him, which gave me like Theon shaving Ramsay vibes.
Yep.
That's your
Game of Thrones reference. Yeah.
Promised Thrones reference there. And then in that scene, he's like, maybe you're the mole, bro. And she's like, haha, funny. I'll be in the other room now. but then you see why William's a threat, because even though he's like addled and all this sort of stuff, like he figures out in 2 seconds that she's a good candidate to be a mole, so you know, all that sort of stuff. So she has him committed. She reveals that she's Dolores. She injects something into his neck. Don't know what that was, but it seems to be involved in the last sequence we see, which is William committed to an institution in some white pajamas, no longer the man in black. He's the man in white now. He sees season one Dolores, like rancher's daughter Dolores. And they have this whole conversation about what's real, what did I do, am I real? This continuation of his questions at the end of last season of like, am I already a host? Did I have a choice in killing my daughter? Yeah. Was I programmed to do it?
Again, that free will question come up again. Right.
Like, yeah. And she's like, welcome to the end of the game, motherfucker.
which is a great line. And it was also a great line when she said it in the trailer, because she says it in such a breathy kind of badass way.
Yeah.
Really love that delivery.
Evan Rachel Wood, because she like starts the scene as like sweet Dolores, and then she just like, she has such a good way of turning her face into like that predator face that she does.
On a dime.
So,
on a dime.
Yeah, on a dime. Yeah.
So John Robinson, my understanding, and I think we can assume that with William's vote, I guess Charlotte is able to take Della's private, right? Like that's kind of the assumption. But I think your issue, we talked about this a little bit, like your issue with this is that in the post-credit sequence in last season, it seemed to imply that we were viewing a moment that happens hundreds of years in the future when like the Forge is already burned out and shut down, and maybe a society of hosts have taken over the world and they're testing William to try to create a copy of him. And I think what your interpretation of this plotline was, hey, this gives the creators of the show free rein to say that was just hallucination, what you saw in the post credits last season, right?
Correct. And like, what's frustrating to me is like, you know, I know that wasn't their plan then, because I talked to a producer from the show and he said, that's a third timeline. It's a different timeline. And he said, it's like at least decades in the future.
The thing is, like, I did not interpret this that way. Like, I think that is still possibly going to happen in the future, right?
It's possible.
Yeah.
But I'm saying they've built themselves a trapdoor where they can not have a timeline that's decades in the future.
Because essentially, we have 4 episodes left of this season, possibly the show.
Right.
And it's entirely possible they're never going to address the post-credit scene from season 2.
Or just make it clear that it's a hallucination, right? You know? But, like, here's my... And, you know, like, with respect to the show creators and HBO and all of them, like, I'm not trying to, like, bag on it, but my feeling about this season is, like, you know, initially when they first created Westworld, it's a hugely expensive show for HBO, and they, like, do you remember that they shut down production partway through season 1 because they had to, like, figure out what they were going to do? And then when they came back, hiatus, they finished season 1. And at that time, they said during that hiatus that they had sketched out 5 seasons, a 5-season arc, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happened is that the second season happened and the ratings went down, right, in the second season. And it's still a hugely expensive show. And then at the end of the second season, they stripped out a bunch of the cast. They moved the show mostly out of the park. And I think a lot of the choices we see this season seem to me to be like budget saving choices. And still the ratings are much lower than they were in season two. My guess, I don't have any hard facts about this, but my guess is that they were given the green light to do 8 episodes a season. And if this season did super well, maybe they could have their 4th and 5th season. And if the ratings are bad, then we're going to call this a series finale. That's my guess, right? It's happened to shows before.
Yeah.
Like my guess is that this season's going to end in a way that could feel like a final ending for the show, or could feel, or, you know, they could do 4 and 5, but I don't think they're going to end the season leaving us like unresolved on things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I think, once again, I don't have any hard facts on this, but I think that when they did that scene at the end of season two, they were still thinking in their 5-season point of view. And now they're like reining things in and dialing them back and saying, okay, how can we tie this all up in 8 episodes if we need to? And so in creating this question around that end of credit sequence as to whether or not it's hallucination, then they're just giving themselves an out and saying like, that was just a William hallucination. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. We will see if your theory ends up being correct. I'm curious to see how, if at all, they will address the post-credit sequence of season 2 at the end of the show. I suspect, you know, the vast majority of this, you know, almost all of this season has taken place in the same timeline within the same time period, right? Like where all of these events seem to be concurrent with each other, basically.
The way it all collided in this episode, you know, like we know that the Charlotte Williams stuff is on the timeline because of the board meeting, right? The board meeting is directly after the events of episode 3. So that timeline. The Mae Musashi stuff, we do know that because when they go to the Arnold house, Sirach says like, we just missed him. Yeah, like by 3 months, basically. Yeah. Like they're all on the same timeline.
Yeah. So I agree. It would be weird for them to jump forward all of a sudden to address what happened at the end of season 2. Right. So we will see how it plays out. But I suspect you're right that this might be how they explain it, which is that William be hallucinating a lot. So
can you blame him? But anyway, it's nice to see Ed Harris, right? This is the first, it's kind of nuts that this is the first Ed Harris appearance this season. But once again, that strikes me as a cost saving, maybe if you only need to pay Ed Harris for like 3 episodes or whatever, that saves you some money. I certainly don't blame them. I don't blame anyone for doing this necessarily. It's just hard to track expectations when you know that perhaps some of the narrative choices that are being made have less to do with like, you know, the creative process,
right,
and more to do with the realities of making a massively expensive TV show.
Yeah. But at the same time, I feel like all of art creation is in some way informed by commerce, and sometimes that's the creators of the thing can make it very invisible to the viewer, and sometimes it's not as invisible, but it can also lead to like really great, you know, ingenious things that occur because people are constrained. I mean, I would argue that I'm enjoying this season a lot more than season 2, and I presume that the budget is less. I have no idea, but I assume it's less. And so I think sometimes having constraints can result in great things.
Absolutely. So, you're absolutely right about that. And like, I think a lot of great art is made out of like, that kind of constraint. And then a lot of like, I just, for example, maybe the reason why I was struggling for like a ship metaphor earlier for where Connell's was is because I watched all of the, for some reason, Dave, we're all doing our own thing.
Are you about to say Avenue 5?
No. Okay. We're all doing our own things to cope.
Everyone's adjusting to this thing as best they can
in this pandemic. I watched all of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies All of them, including like the two really bad ones that I hadn't seen yet. I watched those. And that is just an example of, I mean, not like the budget was small on the first one, but that's just an example of a franchise.
You watched on Stranger Tides.
I paid to rent on Stranger Tides.
You don't have Disney Plus?
It's not on Disney Plus. The last two are not on Disney Plus. I know.
So you went to Disney Plus to find on Stranger Tides, failed, and then paid money for it.
I was like, I'll just watch Curse of the Black Pearl. That's a good movie. I'll just watch that. And then I'm like, well, what if you watched the whole Gore Verbinski trilogy? Okay. And then a morbid curiosity, because I hadn't seen them, drove me to On Stranger Tides and whatever.
That is the saddest story I've heard this week. And by the way, there is a lot of competition for that title.
Anyway, isn't that a perfect example of like, because World's End, which is the third movie, was at the time the most expensive movie ever made, and is currently, I believe, holds the record of being the fifth most expensive movie ever made. Still, this many years later, right? And that is just like, that's just watching a pile of money burn is what that movie is. It's like, because the plot is gibberish, and it's because no one told them no on anything because they had already made so much money. Right. Yeah. And so that's just me just agreeing with you and saying like, often the first installment in a franchise is the best, not just because your ideas are the freshest, but because you are operating in a place of constraint. Yeah, and so, yeah, perhaps the back four of the season will be some of the best Westworld stuff we've ever seen because of constraints. I like optimism. Like, maybe that's what's going to happen. So, you know.
I have many thoughts. Your whole reverie, so to speak, on the Pirate series has set my mind spinning. One thought is, well, first of all, you've heard the expression that, like, when you make your first album, it contains like everything you learned in your life up until the first album. And when you make your second album, it contains everything you learned between the first album and the second album. I don't know that that's true in this case, but I mean, it's a thought that I had while listening to you talk about that.
Ramble about the Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah, no, it's like True Detective season one.
Yes, that's the greatest example. Yes.
Nick Pizzolatto worked on that for like a decade.
Yeah, and it was a great piece of art in my opinion.
It's so good. Yeah. And then season two, he's like, well, I've been working on this for a year. That's the same, right?
And then, have you heard of the Berenstain Bears, like, hallucination story, right? Yeah. Like, so the Berenstain Bears was a children's book that me and many people believe that Berenstain was spelled Berenstein. For the longest time, I was certain that it's Berenstein. But in fact, it is actually Berenstain. So that has led many people to think that we somehow like switched into an alternate universe. Like many of us have like used to
Mandela
be in one universe.
Effect. Yeah.
What'd you say?
The Mandela effect.
The Mandela effect, right. So in the same way, I don't believe On Stranger Tides is a movie that actually exists. I think that we as a society have collectively forgotten about it. And
maybe that's why it's not on Disney Plus. Actually, I mean, I thought it was really interesting that the first three movies are on Disney Plus. And I mean, I know there's a bunch of licensing stuff going on with Disney as they try to like get their whole catalog over on Disney Plus. But I was like, convenient that On Stranger Tides and the fifth one, which I think is the one that really, really doesn't exist, because I can't even remember what it's called.
Dead Men Tell No Tales. Made $794 million at the box office. Yeah.
Starring Oscar winner Javier Bardem.
That's right. That's right.
On Stranger Tides, of course, stars his Oscar winning wife, Penelope Cruz.
I was really hard on At World's End when it first came out, right? Uh-huh. I really thought that movie was terrible. But then I saw On Stranger Tides and Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Correct. Right? Correct.
And then after that, you realize, wow, at least At World's End has like artistry to it. You know?
Yeah, at least Keira Knightley's in At World's End for like a measurable period of time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, sure, the morals of the film, like the themes of the film are morally reprehensible, and the plot is completely incoherent, and it basically dishonors the characters that we've spent the last, 6 hours learning about. But, you know, there's some good fight scenes in that movie.
I was watching At World's End And I got halfway through. I have seen this movie before, but I was watching it and I was like, I need help. And so I opened the Wikipedia page for At World's End to follow the plot through the Wikipedia page to help me decipher what the garbage hell was going on.
Remember when I said that you told me you watching the, you know, On Stranger Tides was the saddest thing I heard this week?
Yeah.
You just topped it.
Because I opened the
Idea of Joanna Robinson sitting in front of her TV, reading the Wikipedia entry for At World's End while watching that movie.
Let me be clear. I was doing other things while I was watching these movies. These are not movies that demand your full attention at all. So there was some like housework being done and blah, blah, blah. But I will say like the other ones you can at least like watch with half an eyeball and do your other stuff. This, I was like, I'm sorry, why are we back in Singapore? What's happening? So anyway.
Yeah, I think we're a little bit off track.
Have we lost the thread?
Bring yourself back online, Joanna.
Okay.
So any closing thoughts on season 3, episode 4 of Decoding Westworld?
Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides doesn't look like anything to me. That's what I'll say.
Bold move of this episode, right, to make them all the same character. I mean, obviously it was the plan for the season, I assume.
Eventually, yeah.
Great, some great fight scenes, some awesome like futuristic designs happen in this episode. Some great architecture. It's not a total loss or anything like that. Like it's not like, oh wow, nothing redeeming in this episode whatsoever. I personally find the reveal to be frustrating. I'm guessing a lot of like at this moment that we're recording this, like we won't have read very much of the reaction to this episode. I'm guessing a lot of people will find it frustrating, but maybe people will be really awed by how holy shit I didn't see that coming. This reveal was.
That being said, I mean, like it is a common theory at this point. Like it burn up the charts on Reddit. So like I think people are the people who read a lot of Reddit and watch the show are mentally prepared for this outcome.
All right, their bodies are prepared.
Yeah, I guess the biggest failure for me in these first four episodes, and like I said, this is all I've seen so far of the season, is I'm not emotionally invested in Caleb the way I think they want me to be. And so that's a problem for me this season. The question marks we still have are around that fifth mystery host, who presumably is Dolores. And then who the other mole is. At Delos, we still don't know. So, you know, there's someone who Serac says he has under his control, and it's not just Charlotte. So who is it?
Let me also bring this up as well before we wrap up, which is the idea of Dolores controlling all these different bodies. I do, you know, this does remind me of this article I read 11 years ago. at io9.com by Annalie Newitz, entitled "When Will White People Stop Making Movies Like Avatar?" I don't know if you know this, John Robinson, but Avatar is a movie that for a very long time was the most successful grossing movie of all time.
Never heard of it.
a man named James Cameron directed. He's an eccentric millionaire that likes to go down into the ocean in submarines.
Deep sea diving. Yeah.
And... the kind of driving point of this piece is like, essentially, why do white people keep creating fantasies in which they are the people? They basically switch sides and then save other people against white people, right? That's so you think of movies like Avatar, you think of Dances with Wolves, you think of The Last Samurai, and even District 9, right? And there's just this kind of idea of I do think that there is this strain of white fantasy in inhabiting the bodies of other races that I think is like I would argue is distinct to white culture. And what I mean by that is like I don't think there's a lot of Asian movies about like Asian people being in white bodies. It's not, and certainly not the most successful Asian film of all time for many years. and so the you know, I don't think this show really has that much, if anything, to say about it. But it is something that's there in the background, that this white character is in a black woman's body and an Asian man's body and is using them in order to achieve her ends. So I thought I'd mention it. We'll see if the show does anything interesting with it, but it's there.
Yeah, I would love for it to address that because, yeah. Like, the I liked that you brought it up. Maybe off air to me.
I mentioned it.
I think when we were talking about, we must have been talking about season two, like this idea the idea of a white woman being in a black woman's body, like for half that season. And so like that was fresh in my mind. You sort of raising that when I was like rewatching the Musashi scenes, and I'm just sort of like, yeah. So like, but the question, I mean, maybe this is like a white person cop out. I'm not trying to like do any sort of like defensive. I think those are important conversations to have. But like at a certain point, how do we gender or racially identify these pearls?
Mm-hmm. Are you saying like, does Dolores even have a gender? Right. Like,
right.
Can she even be said to have a race and a gender? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know. I don't think that that's like a free pass out of this conversation at all, but, you know, there's no real, it's not the same, but there's no real question of her like being in the Connell's body, right? There's no real question of like this woman being inside a man's body because the power differential is different, right. is different. But like, I don't know. I think it's, we got an email, we didn't read it, but like, that's okay. It's just something I'm thinking about in terms of these ideas of these pearls. Are they gendered? Are they racially identified?
Yeah.
You know,
so. I just think the show doesn't have that much to say about race in general. I mean, there is this parallel idea of, there's this idea of like people being oppressed, right? That the robot class are like the oppressed, right? And I would say, like, I don't think it's just an accident or a coincidence that Bern Arnold is a black character and kind of sympathizing with the oppression of these hosts. Like, so I do think that there is a kind of potentially interesting commentary there, but I just don't know that this show has really addressed it at all. It has other things it's addressing. It has a lot on its mind. So we'll see. We'll see if it becomes something interesting by the end of the show. And maybe people think it already is interesting. And if so, I'd be interested to hear their opinions. You can always write those into decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Anything else we want to say about this episode, Joanna?
I mean, I guess we should say that, like, you know, one of the co-creators of the show, Lisa Joy, is not a white person. So, like, not that that, like, you know, gives it a free pass in any way, but just, like, I would be much more uncomfortable if this were a show from David Benioff and Phoebe Weiss. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that it's Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy Nolan puts it in a different place for me in that conversation.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm not saying that gives it a pass, but that is just part of that conversation. You know?
Yeah, and I'm not saying like you can't have there must be a prohibition on those kinds of stories, but I just think that when you invoke that kind of racially charged idea, you know, like I would love if there was some kind of commentary on it, one way or the other, you know. So,
well, I mean, like, I think that, like, Lisa, like, you know, when you mentioned, like, you know, when I was watching the mortician scenes and I was like, well, I think it's cool. Like, I think it's cool that this role that I think would often in other stories belong to a man belongs to a woman. And you like, were like, yeah, an Asian woman. Like that's, and I'm like, yes. And to me, I'm like, that to me strikes me as Lisa Joy's, like, you know, not that you need to have like an Asian woman like running a show in order for like an Asian woman to be given a role, but like I think that that is of interest to Lisa Joy, and so like that I do think that the reason that this isn't like a predominantly white, or maybe it is predominantly white, it probably is predominantly white, but not as white as some other prestige. No,
it's a fairly diverse cast, I would say. Yeah.
Is down to these creators and what they want to see on screen.
Yeah.
But I
yeah.
think you are right that I think they're kind of treating this future as like a post-racial future.
Right. Yeah.
And I just don't think that that is the most interesting thing that they could do with this narrative of like enslavement and liberty, you know?
I mean, because there is this other underclass that's, you know, there's a new underclass in this world that they want to deal with. And yeah, again, I'm holding out hope that there are going to be some interesting parallels as the season goes on. So
that was always my argument around the Charlotte Hale figure, not to bring this conversation up again, but like, that the reason that a young black woman could be on, like, you know, the head, like one of the top board members of Delos is because we're living in a like post racial, post gender issue future. Right. And like, I mean, this murder fantasy park still exists where like women get raped a lot and stuff like that. So like, I don't know.
It's not super progressive maybe in the future.
I mean, I don't know. Like the auction, when I was watching the auction scene in this episode, I was like, well, there's one dude up on a plinth. So at least it's not just women being auctioned off. There's one dude, but like, and all the women are various races. So at least it's not just like, you know, one race of woman being auctioned off, but it's still like, it's
progress.
Still...
It's what we call in our society, two steps forward, six steps backwards.
Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. So anyway.
All right.
I think
we killed it. We killed it. Well, thank you for listening to our discussion of season 3, episode 4. Of course, you can find more episodes of the show at decodingwestworld.com. Email us at decodingwestworld@gmail.com. This episode was edited by Beatty Zhang. And thanks to Simplecast for making this podcast possible. If you are looking for the first and last word in podcast management and analytics, check out simplecast.com and start your 14-day trial today. Until next week, Jonah Robinson, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
You can find me on veryfair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
Follow me on Twitter at Dave Chensky, that's Dave Chensky, and check out one of my other podcasts, Culturally Relevant, at culturallyrelevantshow.com or wherever your podcasts are downloaded. We'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.